Today we're going to continue in our sermon series about parables, and we're going to continue with a very familiar parable today, but I need to ask you a question first. When you look at your life, how do you see your life? You know, is there a purpose to your life? If you were asked to write a mission statement, could you just jot that down, that mission statement, and what would that mission statement be? When you think about your life, when you think about the end of your life, when you think about what happens at the end, how do you feel about that? Do you know what's waiting for you? Do you know what the end means? Do you know where you are in all of that? You know, when you think about these things, you're actually thinking about the perspective that Jesus is trying to give us in these parables about the expectations of God, the experience of life. When you think about that, Jesus is talking in this parable about what the bags of gold are all about and what we are meant to be doing in our life. This is known more as the parable of talents. I call it the parable of the bags of gold, like the NIV does, because if we read this in Luke's gospel, it's the parable of the minas. It's a different measure that's used there. Nonetheless, it's about the same parable. So we call this the parable of the bags of gold, and it's how we are to evaluate our lives here, and it's a very, very powerful message, what we're meant to do with our lives. First thing I want to remind you is there's a set of sermon notes in your bulletin. And you know, there's sermon notes there. It's a little outline. Those are just probing questions that help us kind of engage in what we're trying to learn and talk about today. And you know, I say that we're always asking God to talk to us, and I hope he speaks to you in some way to do that. But you know, when our kids were younger, the things that I used to use the sermon notes for was when we were out to brunch or lunch with the kids afterwards. Those were the things that I would kind of look at in my pocket. So I really looked like I knew what I was talking about. And I was usually the one giving the sermon. So that's what they're there for, and we do that just so you can find some purpose in that for yourself. Okay, I want you to remember, in offering the parables, what Jesus was doing is he was taking everyday things. He was taking very ordinary stories that people would hear, and immediately they would connect with it. They would hear those stories, and immediately they would know what he was talking about. So he would take something from ordinary life in first century Palestine, and what he would do is he would throw that down, and then he would put something else beside it. He would say, this kingdom of God is like, and then he would tell the story. And that was to help people in that day connect with something that they knew a lot about. The kingdom of God is like a pearl of great price. And then he could go on, and everybody knew what that pearl was about, and everybody knew about hidden treasures. Everybody knew about talents and bags of gold. So again, he's taking something here that is very simple and putting it down beside something that could be very complex about what God is about, what God expects from your life, what you're all about, those things, and help them understand where they were in life. Now this parable, the parable of the talents, is just one in a whole category of parables. It's a genre of parables that are telling us what God expects from us, what our life is about, why we're here, what our purpose is, what our mission is. And when we think about these parables, they're all kind of the same. It's usually the story about somebody who has something valuable and they're going away. And they say, I'm going to come back, but in my absence, you're responsible for this stuff right here, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to talk about how you did with it. So they're entrusting this property to somebody else, and they will come back, and after they leave for that period of time, there'll be a reckoning. So how did you do? What did you do with the things that I had given you? All right, so that's what these are about. Now, it's parable of talents here, it's parable of minas in Luke, but then we also think, it makes us think of the parable of the vineyard, right? There was a king who had a vineyard and was going on a trip, so he leased that out to some servants. And then he came back, or he sent other servants back to check on it, and the servants weren't treated very well. See, that one didn't go very well, but it's the same genre, it's the same way. And then there's the bridegroom and the bridesmaids, right? The bridegroom's going to go away, and he's going to come back right before the wedding, right when the wedding's ready. That's when he's going to show up. And what does he find? He finds five bridesmaids that are prepared and five that are not. It's the same thing. What have you been doing while I was away, he says. All right, now the parable of the talents, along with several of these other parables, we find them in Matthew 24 and 25. In these two chapters, Jesus is specifically talking about the second coming. And as believers, we believe in the second coming. We know that there will be a time when Jesus returns and all of creation, including us, will be reconciled, will be redeemed, will be reckoned. Now, whether we're a believer in that second coming is during our lifetime or at some other time, we all believe that our time comes when we stand before the King, when we stand before the Lord. Whether we meet Jesus at that second coming or when we meet him when we leave this place, we all believe that he is coming back at one time or another, and there is this idea of accountability. What did his disciples do in his absence? And that's what we understand. And we believe that there are certain things that we are called to be doing while he is absent. And that's why we look at this parable. And here's what I want to tell you about these parables about the life expectations of the believers. These are very real circumstances. And some of these images are unpleasant because they're meant to be real to the people who are hearing them in the hearing, in the place, then and now. So we get very stark images of what God is looking for on that last day, what God's expecting of us while he's gone. So we come to this parable, and this is probably by far the most popular or most familiar of the parables in this genre. And right away, we start talking about the talent. Now, the word talent we talk about today, what Christine talked here this morning, we get that word talent or our ability to sing or do different things, we get that directly from this parable. It did not mean that in those days, but today we hear that word talent, and it is drawn from this parable, and this is what we believe it is. Some of us are wonderful singers, like the music that we just heard. Some of us can play instruments. Some of us have a great business mind, and we can use that for the glory, that talent for the glory of God, and there's artistic abilities and other things. But it comes from this parable. But in Jesus' day, it did not mean that. In Jesus' day, it was a measurement of money. So first it was a weight of money, but then it became known as an amount of money. So people actually knew how much it was when Jesus said a talent. They would relate that to an amount of money. So we need to know a little bit about the money of the day and the denominations of coinage to know what we're talking about. And the one that you've all heard of is the denarii, or the drachma. That was the most common coin that we hear about in that day. Now, I would equate a drachma most commonly to like a $20 gold piece in the old days. You know, that was the main coinage when we had gold coins. The drachma, or the denarii, was one day's wages. And that's how you can look at that $20 gold piece. So one day's wages in those days for an average laborer, maybe we could say today that that's $15 an hour. So if you took $15 an hour towards an 8-hour day, that would be $120, if I've got my math right. So a drachma would be a $120 coin. Okay. Now, you know what you make or what you've made in your career. So what is your one-day wage? Your one-day wage is one of those coins. It's one drachma. So for our example here, it's going to be the $120 one-day, $15 an hour job for a laborer. That is what a drachma was. Now, in Luke's gospel, Luke uses the mina. A mina is 100 drachmas. Okay? So think about that. So when Luke tells this story in the parable of the minas, the master gives all the servants 10 drachmas, or 10 minas. And in doing that, he's giving them 10 100 days wages. Are you following me here? This is a considerable amount of money. So that would be $12,000 that Luke's master would be giving them in that. So 60 minas equals one talent. All right? I'm hoping I'm getting this straight. The mina was 100 drachmas, 100 days' wages. That's $12,000. The talent is 60 minas. So if we do the math, that, and a mina is $12,000, that means a talent is 6,000 days' wages, or one would equal $720,000. Okay? So when people heard the story that a servant was getting a talent, they were getting what we would equate to today as about a 401k at the end of our time, if we're doing pretty well. It'd be $750,000. And that's how we look at this. This is an incredible, valuable thing that this master is doing here. Now, in the Greek, the term here for servant is doulos, it's slave. But, you know, we as modern civilized people, we don't like the word slave. We think of the 17th and 19th century American slave, and that's not what they're talking about here. So in the first century, when they talked about slaves, there were all different connotations around that. And obviously, if a master is going away and leaving his slave $750,000 of his personal fortune to take care of, it obviously means a little bit different than it does to us in our modern sense of slave. But we use the words, I don't like the word slave, so we use the word servant here. So can you imagine, in this particular case, you see this master coming and giving one talent to one, that's almost $750,000, two talents to another, almost $1.5 million, and then that one servant, according to their abilities, got $3.6 million. Can you imagine that? I have to be honest with you, there's something terrifying about that. Here is a very large portion of my personal fortune, and would you just take care of this till I get back? Do the best you can with it. I don't know when I'm going to be back. It's going to be quite some time, but when I get back, well, then we'll recollect and reckon and do all the things that we need to do with that. There's something terrifying about that. I remember a long time ago, I'm talking about in the previous millennia, you know, in the late 1980s, I was really into boating and doing things down in Ocean City, and I had a friend who was fortunate enough, and he bought a brand new Sea Ray Pechanga. Now, for those who know what that is the top of the line Sea Ray. It is a fast, sleek, luxurious, it is a boat, and it was probably the only one on the bay, to be honest with you, because it was way above my ability to afford. And, you know, I remember Kim knows, we spent a lot of time in that boat with friends and doing different things, and this friend of ours had just gotten the boat, and we were out and doing our regular run around and stuff, and this guy looks at his watch, and he goes, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to be in Summers Point having dinner with my family. They're all there waiting on me. He says, we're going to Summers Point. So I'm like, okay, we go over to Summers Point. And we get there, and he gets out, and he throws me the keys, and he says, take this back over and put it in the slip, the north end of the island. And I was like, are you kidding me? I'm not touching it. He said, do you know what can happen out there in the water? I can run into another boat. And I'm a boater. I had my own boat. It was nowhere near the level of this. But I'm not taking this thing anywhere. I could run aground. I have to back it into the slip. I could hit a piling. Let's just do it. There's no way I'm doing this. Can you imagine your boss coming in someday and saying, hey, I'm going away for a while. Here's $3.6 million. Would you take care of this while I'm gone? What we're supposed to pick up in this parable is there's a whole range of emotions that we see here, and some of it is fear. I've never had anything. Now, we're honored because we're being trusted with something, right? And then there's the anxiety, and then there's the excitement that this is coming our way, but then there's that other thing, the fear involved. I'm terrified. I don't care if it's $720,000 or it's $3.6 million. There's emotions that go along with this, and the master is going to be gone for a very long time. Such a vast amount. Such a vast amount. This is going to require something on the servant's part. And part of what we're meant to realize here, what Jesus is really trying to teach us about life, is he's saying to us, we are all entrusted with this incredibly valuable treasure of God. Every one of us has been given these talents in measures according to our ability. Every one of us has that to us from God. And then we ask, what is this treasure? You know, and a lot of people look at me when I say this and say, well, Pastor Tom, I don't have $1 million. I'd like to have $1 million. I don't have that. I say, what is this treasure? This treasure entrusted to us. Now remember, this harkens back to our previous talk, the treasure hidden in a field, or the pearl of great price. Those were the treasures that people are willing to give up everything. They do anything in order to attain that treasure. This is what we're talking about here. It's the kingdom of God. It's the good news of God. It's the love and the grace and the mercy of God. And once we find it, it's worth everything. Okay, so we find this connection between last week's parables and this week's parables. That treasure, that talent that's entrusted to you is your very life. It's every hour of every day. It's everything that God has given you to do his work here on this planet. Every day when you wake up, it's a gift from God. Every day when you wake up, you have so many hours in that day. Hey, if you live to be 80, you've had 700,000 hours. What'd you do with them? And if you're not that fortunate and life is cut short at 40, you had 350,000 hours. What did you do with them? That's the gift that Jesus is trying to tell us about here. And it's interesting, you know, in my job, I get to spend a lot of time on holy ground. I get to spend time in that sacred ground where people are coming to the end of their lives. And people who are in that place have a much different perspective on what we're talking about here than we do in midlife. You know, you go talk to somebody who's getting closer to that place, and they've got that perspective, just one more day, Pastor Tom. I'm giving thanks for God. It's just one day at a time. You know, that's a whole new perspective. And that's where the parable of talents is coming from. Well, I woke up today, and it's just one more day, and I'm thankful for that. And somehow you begin to see it that way. You know, when you're faced with life that way, you see it, that your gifts are your family and your time and the grace. grace of God and the love that you've experienced. It's the hours that you have. It's the world that God entrusted for you to take care of. It's the ability to see a sunset or a sunrise or the leaves change on the trees. Those are all gifts. But sometimes we're forced into thinking that. And the gift is entrusted into your care. The world, the planet is entrusted into your care. And those are the talents that we are given. And if we read this parable of talents correctly and we get it, it is supposed to change our perspective on those things. It is supposed to change our perspective on everything that we have. And it's meant to produce an attitude in us that is an attitude of gratitude. It's an attitude of gratefulness. So that, yes, when we get up, and I don't know what you do when you get up, you know, sometimes I kneel beside the bed. Sometimes I just raise my arms up. Sometimes I just put a hand on Kim's shoulder. She does. I just do things and recognizing the gifts that I have from God. And it's saying, God, thank you for another day. And you know, somehow I got to live up to it. And today I want to do a little bit better than I did yesterday. Thank you. I don't know where I'm going, but help me to realize that it's all a gift. And it is. It's entrusted to our care. All right, all of life is a gift. And it's contingent upon God. So in everything we give thanks. Like we heard in that letter from Paul earlier today. In everything, give thanks. But we all come across people, and we all know people that have a different outlook. They feel like they're owed something. You know people like that? Instead of things going out from them, it's all supposed to be coming in. And I think we live that way sometimes. I think we take it all for granted, and we just think it needs to be coming towards us, like I'm owed something. I was driving on the school field the other day. I was owed that space in the left lane to get behind that slow traffic. I just felt it, you know? And I took it. We just feel like that's ours. So do we go through life like this, holding on to all of it, or do we go through life like this? This is what this parable is supposed to talk to us about. We are servants of the Most High, and whatever we have, it's a gift entrusted to us by God. That's the first point. The second point that comes to us in the picture of the parable is that we learn that we are servants. And as I said, the doulos, the terminology here is slaves. We are slaves, and it's a harsh word. I know it. And I don't like that word to myself. But when we really think about it, you know, we have been bought and paid for. We have had a price paid for us. We are owned. We were sins to slave and death, but somebody paid a price for us, and that was God, who paid the price via his own son's life so that we wouldn't have to suffer that. Jesus suffered that for us. So we have been bought and paid for. We've been redeemed. We've been set free for all of the other things that would look to enslave us in this world. So in that case, let's face it, we're slaves. Now, we've talked about this in previous parables. Our God, our King, our Master is very, very gracious with us, and he gives us a choice. We can choose to live the life of the servant and the slave, or we can choose not to. That's our choice, but we are all subjects. Our lives belong to God, and our life is meant to do God's will. And we have, this is the terminology used in this parable. But in other parables, we have the Father and the Son, right? God is the Father, and we're the children. In other parables, we have the groom and the bride. So we have God is the bridegroom, and we're to marry him into the church and do these different things. We have all of these different metaphors, okay? But here, we are the servants of God, all right? And the interesting thing about that is, you know, when you live your life knowing that God's entrusted with these things, and you live your life knowing that every day is a mission, and you live your life knowing that you've been put out there and given certain opportunities, you find more joy. You know, if you live like it's all for me, it's all for myself, and I'm just going to pull it in tight and hold on to it, that's a very stressful way to live. But when you're giving it away and you realize that you've been put in these circumstances for the purpose of God, you find more joy. When you let the Master have his way, it's a wonderful way to live. And the third point that we get from this parable is this. There will be a day of reckoning. There will be a time of accounting for those gifts that we've been entrusted with, what has been on loan to us. And what we have to think here is, how do we measure how we've done? How do we measure the success in this life as we go through? How do we measure this mission that God has put us on? And this isn't easy, because when in our world, how does this world measure our success? Net worth? Oh, he did really well. You know, I have to admit, when I do officiate at funerals, I have never had a funeral where anybody ever talked about somebody's net worth. It was inconsequential. But that's what the world would tell us. He who dies with the most toys wins, right? Well, no, that's what the world tells us. You know, or this, how about a measure of happiness? The one who was the most happy was the most successful. But how do you measure happiness? What is the measure of happiness? We all go through mountaintop moments, and we've all spent time in the valley. How do you measure that out? Well, in this parable, what Jesus is telling us is it's neither of those things. It's totally something else. It's a different way of measuring success in your life. When the master returns after being away for a long period, he measures our success by what has been entrusted to us while he was gone. And he finds two servants there that give him an incredible return on his investment, right? This first one comes and says, you gave me 5 and I'm bringing back 10. And you can sense the joy in this. There's no shame. There's nothing there. I didn't keep it for myself. I went out and I just did what I thought was right. I followed your words. You know, I did that. And the master has these words, well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into your rest. You deserve it. And then that other servant comes with the 2 and he says, you gave me 2. And there's that same excitement. There's that same response. I have 4. Here's 4. They're giving back more than they were given. And the master's getting this incredible return on his investment. And he's looking at these going, wow, this is so exciting. This is so exciting. They returned double while the master was away. And when you think about this, it means whatever God gave you, that is a gift. That's the love of God, you know, every hour of your life, the mercy and grace that's been imparted on you, the guidance, the hope, the friends, the family, the education, just the skills, the talents, the abilities. Have you leveraged your gifts during the time that you've been given to multiply them for God? Because obviously that's what's happening here. And that means on the last day, I suspect that, you know, you'll be there, you'll be standing there in that reckoning space, and God's going to say to you, he's going to say, I remember all those times. I remember all those times. I remember the time when you're on your way to a meeting but somebody called and they needed something and you stopped and you took care of them. And you didn't have to do that because you had this going on over here, but you sacrificed your time and your funds and you did what you had to do over here. I remember that time. And there's going to be these times that come back and he says, you know something? You did what I called you to do. And here's the important part of the story. You don't know the rest of it. All right, see, God is remembering all these times, but God sees how far the ripples in the pond go. You know, so he sees what's happening. I know the time that you stopped and helped that person made a difference in their lives. But what you didn't see is they went over here and made a difference in somebody else's life because you helped them. And then that person went and did something. That person went and did something. He said, I saw the time when you were very uncomfortable and you went out of your comfort zone because you were going on to Chosen 300 and you were going to spend time with people that you didn't know what they were going to be like. And they smelled kind of funny and they talked funny and they weren't like you, but you went out of your comfort zone. You put your life away and you went and spent time with them. He said, I remember the time that you agreed to teach Sunday school and you weren't sure if the kids would like you, you know, and you were afraid you would be the boring teacher, but you went and did it anyway. You were afraid that they wouldn't like you, but you did it anyway. That was out of your comfort zone. You made a difference. I saw how you invested in other people. I saw where you took a risk and you stepped out. I saw when you went on a mission trip and you were worried about the language barrier and you were concerned about the plane trip and you were worried about your passport and all the shots and everything. But he said, you did all that for me and you went and made a difference. And I know the rest of the story. I know where my glory exists because you did what I called you to do. All those ways. I saw when you used your business in order to bless other people. I saw when you poured yourself out. Well done, good and faithful servant. You did well with the small things. I'm going to entrust you with even more. Enter into the joy of your master. That's what God's looking for in us. That is what God is looking for us. And the last day when you meet him face to face and he says, what'd you do with those 700,000 hours? He already knows. What'd you do with your physical strength, your relationships, your opportunities? What did you do with it? And in the case of those first two servants, those first two servants did something remarkable that they didn't even know they had. But it happened. They multiplied the talents twofold. And then we find that servant who failed to do that. And that servant took that talent and buried it in the ground. And last week we talked about buried treasure, and I wonder the connection between these two things, but we'll get into that another time. This man was afraid to take a risk. He was afraid to act. He stayed in his comfort zone. He took the $720,000 and he buried it in the ground. And when the master came back, he dug it up and got it out and brushed it off and said, Master, here it is. It's exactly as you gave it to me. I didn't lose any of it. I put it in a safe place. Nobody found it while I was away. Here it is. It's yours. And I just sensed the master going, oh, the missed opportunity. what have you done? Can you imagine? Now, the scriptures tell us this was lazy. I think he was more risk averse and he didn't want to do anything wrong, you know. I mean, many of us have financial planners, right? You know, when you start getting into, you know, you start your first real job and you go out there and you're thinking you're going to have kids someday, so you want a college fund. You're going to retire, obviously, someday, so you put some of that away. And you go talk to your financial planner and you say, caution to the wind, let's be risky. I'm not even married yet, you know, and I don't know when I'm going to retire. That's too far off. I can't see it. It'll be risky, and we'll just put it all in these stocks and do this thing. And then about 15, 20 years later, you go talk to your financial planner and you say, well, I can see retirement now, and I have two kids. They're both young teenagers and are in elementary school. Let's be a little less risky, but here's what we've got to do. And then there comes that day when you say, you know, I'm there. And you say, honey, let's go talk to our financial planner. And you go talk to him, and you go talk to him, and you say, you know, we've been doing this for 40 years, and now we get to the place that we're ready to retire. And we've entrusted with this thing to you the whole day through our payroll deductions and a little IRA money here and there. So how'd we do? How'd we do? And he says, you did great. I'll be right back. And he goes into the next room and comes back, and he has a shoebox. And he opens that shoebox, and there's every check you've written. There's every dollar you ever gave him to invest for your future. And he says, here it is, just as you gave it to me. I didn't lose a cent. Something tells me you wouldn't be very happy with that. That's where the master is here. That's where the master is with this one that he gave such a valuable gift to. This is the one that he gave so much to. And in the same way, those lost opportunities because of this servant who is unwilling to take risk. Look, folks, here's what I know. When it comes to the Christian life, when it comes to being a disciple of Christ, you're called to take risk. You are called to not reside in your comfort zone. You're called to get out of that space that you know is your own and go into other spaces where you can affect people's lives and change the world. And that's what we're about. These lost opportunities. You know, I always wonder about this parable. I wonder if that third servant would have come back and he said, I lost it all. I tried over and over again, and nothing worked, and I just did the best I could. I'm sorry, you know? What do you think the master would say? Well, you didn't do very well. You weren't really smart about it, but at least you tried. And you know something? There's a story beyond yours that in your trying, you actually did something. You didn't even know about it. The obstacle that we have is our own comfort zone, of keeping it to ourselves, is wrapping ourselves in it, not sharing it. Those gifts that we long to keep for ourselves. This one didn't even try. You were too afraid. Our lives as believers in Christ requires risk. Risk to go out for Christ and do the things. Hey, you know something? Telling someone else the difference that Christ has made in your life. Have you ever done that? You should have. Because here's what happens. You tell somebody about what happened to Christ and your heart starts to beat. Oh boy, I'm taking a risk here. Are they going to accept this? Are they going to know this? What if I invite them to church? Okay, I know I'm supposed to invite them to church. That's a risk. That's outside of our comfort zone. That's what we're called to do. That's what Jesus is talking about here. And you know, here's what I found. God is telling us in this parable that this is our purpose in life. But here's what I know. Much of the time when we're making decisions personally and as a church, there's two paths. There's this path over here that's the easier, wider way, and there's a lot of people traveling that. And then we look at this path over here, and that's a very narrow, difficult way. And when we think about this path, we get a little bit, our stomach starts to flutter a little bit, and we start to think about what can go wrong. But here's what I found in life. This path is almost always the right path. When we think, are we going to turn that old parlor into a coffee shop and invite new people in? That's really hard. You know, when we say, am I going to invite somebody to church? That can be really hard. Almost always, that narrow, difficult path is the right way. And you know, when we do that, when we live that way, we find joy. All right, I want to close this out by giving you my own image of the parable of the talents and how I see it in my work. I've, probably more than anything, I've done funerals over the past 18 years. And funerals are a place where I've told many of you it's an opportunity because you have a lot of people coming into the church who, a lot of them don't normally go to church, but they'll come and they'll pay respects. And I've done these funerals where, we're paying respects to a man or a woman who their whole life has tried to reach out to others. They've poured themselves into their families and others, and you get these co-workers and employees coming, and there's emails and letters that are written, and I have that planning meeting with the family, and everybody's got, there's just so much to say, and they don't know where to stop saying it, and you get to that day, and there's just such celebration, and there's incredible grief because this person's gone. But the joy is, we know in that person, they fulfilled this commandment, and they're hearing those words as we're talking about them, well done, good and faithful servant. Because they poured themselves out. But then there's the other funeral. There's one where you go to the planning meeting and you can realize some of the people really don't want to be there. And they struggle to express themselves in things that they can say that would talk about the relationship or the life that this person had. And there aren't any co-workers or employees coming. There's no letters or emails that extol what this person has done in their lives and so forth. And you get to that day, and of course that person was loved. Moms, dads, children, they always love the family members, but you get to that day, and it's just this thought, it's just this thing, this missed opportunity. What if he or she could have just learned earlier that this wasn't all about, but they lived their life for themselves, and they didn't pour themselves out into others, and they held it all to themselves, and there's just this tragic sense, it could have been so much more, and that missed opportunity that just will never see the light of day. And from those experiences, I can't just help walk away thinking, wow, the gifts that we are given. So that's what I have to ask you here today, and that's what this parable is telling us. Which path are you taking? Are you taking that easier path that's wide and everyone's taking it and it's all about them? Or are you taking that narrow, hard path where you're asked to give it up for God, where you're asked to use every relationship, every opportunity, every business transaction, every song you sing, every day you drive to work, every day you get up and welcome your kids, every day you kiss your husband or your wife? Are you devoting that to God? And do you know the difference? Do you understand that you're a steward of the resources of God and that you're God's servant and every day is a mission from Him? And in the end, life is all from God. Give thanks. Seek to multiply those gifts. And when you do that, God will say those words to you. Well done, good and faithful servant. Let's pray.